Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you, Mike. Yes, I'd like to talk about the interface between the trading system and the proposals which are on the table at the moment for climate change and the implications of all of this for the World Trade Organization. And it is a good way to bring together a number of the issues which have been discussed, because they do emerge when we start to look at the interface between the trading system and measures to control and reduce carbon emissions. The interface comes in many ways. Joseph Stiglitz, for example, has advocated anti-dumping duties on goods coming from countries that don't have their own emission reduction schemes, but probably many of the subsidies for new technology that are being advocated or adopted by, implemented by governments violate the WTO subsidies agreement that the Doha Development Agenda is trying to negotiate, a sectoral agreement on free trade in environmental goods and services. The list goes on. But I'd like to concentrate on three high-profile issues. The first one relates to the competitiveness concern. Now, the competitiveness concern comes from the fact that countries have different reduction targets, or none at all. They have different time horizons for meeting their objectives, and they adopt different policies, whether it be an emission trading scheme, whether it be a carbon tax, whether it be a direct regulation or whatever. And the result of that is that these policies impact differently on the competitiveness of countries, of sectors and enterprises within those particular countries. So resources will be allocated according to the policies which are adopted by countries and the speed with which countries move towards meeting their objectives. Not for any fundamental economic reason, common objective, reduction of emissions, but different policies. This doesn't make economic sense. So what's the reaction to that? The reaction to that is, let's use trade measures. Let's have border tax adjustment or whatever to level the playing field. The second concern is the carbon leakage concern. Carbon leakage is sort of the old pollution haven trade and environment issue, where countries will see enterprises moving offshore to take advantage of less stringent emission control regimes. This doesn't make economic sense. No economic sense. But just as importantly, it doesn't make any sense in reducing emissions, because if a country has an emission trading scheme or a carbon tax scheme which effectively reduces emissions, and their industry moves to countries that don't have those schemes, then globally speaking, emissions will increase. So it's counterproductive. And again, trade measures are one way that have been suggested to try and avoid carbon leakage, a way to level the playing field. Thirdly, trade measures have been proposed as a way to punish countries that are not doing enough. If countries are dragging behind what other countries think they should be doing, then apply trade sanctions. Another trade measure. Now, all of these are important, and if you had any doubts about that, listen to President Sarkozy of France, or former President Jacques Chirac, or former Prime Minister Dominique Villepin, who have all advocated taxes on imports from countries that in the early stages weren't signatories to the Kyoto Protocol. That would include Australia, and that would include the United States. Or the Waxman-Markey Bill, which has just passed the House of Representatives in the United States, calls for sanctions on countries that are not doing enough. Now, these measures are all trade measures. So the key question there is, can these sorts of problems be resolved, competitiveness, carbon leakage, and punishing countries, through trade measures? In other words, can the WTO solve the problem? That's the bottom line. I'd like to just just say a couple of things about the WTO, because it's very relevant within this context. The objective of the WTO is to progressively liberalise trade through a process of negotiations. It's to put in place legally binding rules that establish rights and obligations, whereby the predictability and stability of trade can be maintained or increased. It's a rules-based system. It has 153 member countries, pretty much all of them who are signatories to the Climate Change Convention. In the WTO, the rules are legally binding. They're based on non-discrimination, and all decisions are taken on the basis of consensus when it comes to changing rules. Rules are not worth anything unless they can be implemented. The compliance mechanism of the WTO is the most powerful of any international organisation. If rights and obligations are not respected, the complaining country will take the complaint to the dispute settlement mechanism. This is not a best endeavours organisation, but if a country is found not to be respecting its obligations, and three things can happen. That country is obliged to change its domestic legislation, or it can be legally retaliated against, or it has to pay compensation. And the sums involved here are simply billions of dollars. Airbus-Boeing dispute, for example, will end up with a decision that will cost someone billions of dollars. Also, the WTO, this will sound like a public relations exercise, I guess it is a bit, but much more than that is relevant to the role that the WTO is expected to play within terms of the climate change regime. That since 1950, the volume of world trade has increased 32 times, the share of GDP in world trade has increased from 5% to 21%. There were 22 members of GATT, there are 153 members of the WTO. World trade takes place at $1.5 billion per hour every day. So, a stable trading system is critical to revival of the world economy. It's as simple as that. And what's being discussed at the moment within the context of the climate change regime could shoot down the WTO. Sounds dramatic, but it's quite true. What we lose sight of is that the climate change regime and the WTO are very, very different. The WTO has no rules about the environment, it has no rules about climate change, and certainly no rules about emission trading or carbon taxes per se. Its job is to avoid hidden barriers to trade. In the WTO, governments act unilaterally with respect to their own national interests. That's what Australia has done. It's what we have done in phasing out our domestic action. The climate change is to act collectively in the global interest. As far as the WTO is concerned, its objective is to negotiate away government regulations. The Climate Change Convention is to put in place government regulations. Why would the WTO want to remove government regulations? Because it distorts comparative advantage. What will happen with the climate change measures is to put back in place measures that will distort comparative advantage. What happens if there's a dispute in the WTO, countries don't agree. Well, there's a bilateral dispute. Some country doesn't respect its obligation. What happens in the Climate Change Convention is we have a global problem because one country is not meeting the expectations or its own obligations. Let me just turn to specific examples of where the problems lie when we start to try to use the WTO as a solution by using trade measures to deal with the issues that I outlined. First of all, border tax adjustment. Now, border tax adjustment, and when I say border tax adjustment, it doesn't matter if it's a tax or it doesn't matter if we have an emission trading scheme. The principle is just the same. But what's pretty clear is that domestic taxes on products can be imposed on imports and they can be rebated on export products. No problem. Value-added tax, GST, excise tax, sales tax, or whatever. What's totally unclear in WTO law is whether, in fact, taxes on fossil fuels used in the production process can be rebated. This has never been tested. Also, whether taxes on products included in the production process of a final good can be rebated. What about the taxes on the aluminium that's in the aluminium bicycle frame? Now, of course, there's a problem of finding the carbon footprint to rebate those taxes or to impose the taxes, but from a legal perspective, from the WTO perspective, this is completely unclear. One of the reasons that the Gano report, the Green Paper and the White Paper all rejected border tax adjustment was precisely that, the difficulty in tracking down the carbon footprint. But over and above that, it's completely unclear what would happen within the WTO context if countries tried to rebate the taxes on the embedded carbon content of goods that were traded. Another point, most favoured nation treatment. You can't, in the WTO, discriminate between like products coming from different sources. It's the underlying principle of the WTO. So the objective, for example, of President Sarkozy or for the US bills is such that it's just not possible to charge a different tax on products coming from China and products coming from the European Union, for example. This would violate the fundamental principles of the WTO. They have to be considered as like products, irrespective of how they're produced, if they compete in the marketplace. So a ream of paper that's produced with solar energy is exactly the same for the WTO as a ream of paper which is produced by a carbon-emitting production process. That's as clear as a bell. And why? Well, the WTO just doesn't want to get into the business of using trade measures to force countries to adopt different production techniques. And when I say that making exceptions for the climate change concerns can shake the foundations of the WTO, if trade measures can be used to affect the production process in other countries, why not have restrictions on hand-knotted carpets made by children under a certain age? Or why not have restrictions on anything that is competing in your domestic market, genetically modified organisms, products derived from genetically modified organisms, for example? So we'd find ourselves the WTO would be taking decisions on what could and couldn't be legally discriminated against because of the production process, and it doesn't want to do that. Finally, a third example is exceptions. Of course, exceptions can be taken to protect the environment. Now, there have probably been 450 cases brought to the WTO dispute settlement process. There were 300 brought to GATT. Only two have successfully argued that they need an exception for the environment. Very, very stringent rules apply. And what would have to be shown is that if a country was to be discriminated against because it was, for one reason or another, creating problems for the environment, it would have to show that it had an obligation one way or another, to reduce emissions. And what we see at the moment is the countries that would be targeted, like China, India and Brazil, are all exempted under the Kyoto Protocol from emission reductions. Therefore, when the dispute settlement process looked at a case like this, they would have to look at what the existing law was in other multilateral treaties. And this way we would put two treaties on a collision course. Which one would take priority over the other? Just three examples, but there are many, many examples of these sorts of problems. Mike mentioned the what's happening in Europe. I think it is worth saying that in France, for example, what we have seen is a report which has just been submitted to the president, which was commissioned by the president from a former prime minister of the opposing party, which is in power at the moment, where they have proposed in France a carbon tax on fuels, 7 cents per litre on gasoline, which is significant, and on heating fuels, which will add something like €320 per annum to family bills. So the point is that we do find places where, or situations, where we have a multi-track approach. France is certainly part of the emission trading scheme in Europe, but at the same time, it's seriously looking at and thinks it will adopt a domestic tax on carbon. Conclusion. Mike, I'll be very brief. Firstly, the WTO can't fix the problem. That's for sure. Secondly, change the WTO rules. You can't. You can't change the WTO rules. They've never been changed. It takes a consensus decision to change them. Two-thirds of WTO members have no obligations under the Kyoto Protocol. They're not going to agree to a change in rules. What can happen, and this is what Roscano and the government papers have proposed, and that's an agreement outside the WTO. Don't bring the problems to the WTO. Have a self-standing agreement outside the WTO. Of course, the WTO has a role to play, a secondary role in seeing what can and what can't be done within the WTO. If there have to be WTO illegal measures, the application of sanctions, for example, and the WTO legal, that can be done. But it can be done outside the WTO, and there should be agreement on the conditions under which those sanctions can be applied. Now, it's not beyond the capacity of governments to make such an agreement. The Montreal Protocol does that. Also, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species violates the WTO. It's not a problem, as does trade in hazardous wastes. So the point is that what is needed here is a coherent approach between different institutions and the approaches taken in very different areas, and we have the opportunity for that because I might remind you that the Copenhagen Summit is from the 7th to the 18th of December, and the WTO ministerial meeting is from the 30th to the 2nd of December. These meetings almost coincide. So for governments to have a consistent and mutually supportive approach on how to deal with the trade-related problems in the climate change area, the timing couldn't be better. Mike, thank you very much.